your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Mike Larson. In this segment, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also the editor of the Mark to Market blog. I visit there every day, and that's where Mark really summarizes the key data points and key market moves or sector moves that he thinks need to be noted, a lot dealing as well with currencies. Mark, where I want to start here is a big picture look, kind of encompassing some of the data, especially the jobs data from Friday, and the rising oil price. Oil this week broke out to, I believe it was a seven-year high. So that plays into the whole inflation narrative for the, well, I guess overall focus here being, is inflation going to be transitory or not? Plus, we also did have that jobs data where the actual data, the hirings were very disappointing. They came in way shorter than estimates. However, hourly earnings, those rose more than estimates. So again, another chip in that more inflation category. What do you take away from these two main factors from this week when it comes to inflation and when it comes to the overall economy, please, Mark?
Yeah, sure. I think the most important takeaway is that the Federal Reserve is still on track to reduce its bond buying starting next month. Market also is not persuaded by the weakness in the jobs data, the job creation data, to pull back from its aggressiveness in pricing in more and one Fed rate hike by September next year, much earlier than the Federal Reserve has admitted to. Remember, in June, in the September dot plots, only about half the Fed officials thought of a rate hike next year would be appropriate. The market's saying it's a done deal plus more.
Well, hey, Mark, one of the questions I have around this then is, with the Feds admitting that the inflation has been a little bit stickier and it has been a little frustrating to them, a lot of that has been written off as, you know, just supply chain interruptions and year-over-year base effect. But we are seeing it sticking in things like the energy sector that Corey mentioned. We are seeing inflation sticking around in some of the base metals and some of the agricultural products. But when we see wages increasing, like we did in that jobs report, and we see that wage pressure, when you have cost inputs going higher and you have wages going higher, it typically leads to cost push inflation. Do you think that may give the Fed a moment of pause to kick the can down the road and not taper like they say they're going to do in November? Or do you think they'll stick to it and stick to their knitting?
Yeah, I think that the Fed has little choice right now but to taper. Powell has acknowledged that even before today's data, that many of his colleagues thought that the conditions for tapering already are in place. I think that, you know, there's some elements of the today's report that I think that aren't as weak as one might suspect. For example, you know, the jobs data is really a product of two surveys, an establishment survey, that's what gave us that non-farm payroll number, and then a household survey. In that household survey that we get the unemployment rate. But in that household survey, very interesting, it showed that over 500,000 people, that they were working more than the previous month. So there does seem to be some distortions there. And we know that the headline number, so low, 194,000, lowest number for this year, is partly skewed by a problem that we're having with the hiring back at schools. Typically, U.S. local governments, state governments hire educators, teachers in September. And because they hired fewer this year, the seasonal adjustment really distorts it to the downside. Remember what happened too. The August number, which we complained about, was so low at 235,000, that was revised up to 366,000. And typically the revisions point in the direction of the underlying trend. But it does seem to me true what you say, that, you know, we did see that hourly earnings rise 0.6%. Kind of interesting, because in August, the 0.6% was revised down to 0.4%. Two things are happening, it seems like, within the labor market. One is there does seem to be a genuine increase in wages. Secondly, there's also a change in the composition. So if people, say, my peers, hold on to their jobs during COVID, and people who are facing customers, fast food restaurants, hospitality industry, they lose their jobs. And then to get them, so it affects like what the average hourly earnings are. I would say there's an element of the report that's overlooked as we talk about the price component and the jobs created. There's a, it also counts, of course, is how long we're working. And there, the average work week jumped 0.2 hours. It doesn't sound like much, 0.2 hours, 12 minutes. But when you have 100 million people working, that 12 minutes turns into, that's worth a lot of new jobs in terms of output. So I would say that even though the headline numbers were weak, you should still be seeing strong output numbers. And that really is an issue when we talk about, when you think about wages and labor costs, because remember, wages are only about half of what your labor costs truly are when you put in the benefits and the other things that employers have to provide. And so you'd say, well, higher wages or higher labor costs turn into squeezing profit margins. But there's a piece of the puzzle that we forget then, and that's productivity. And so in the U.S., the combination, the way economists call both measures together is unit labor costs. Unit labor costs are very tame in the U.S. through the first half of the year. We don't have Q3 data yet, but it's remarkable that what the higher wages or the higher labor costs are being blunted by improved productivity. Because think about it, we have, say, roughly 5 million people, 6 million people fewer working now than we're working in 2019. And yet our output is higher. That productivity is why I think that some of the inflation fears are being exaggerated.
Well, Mark, I know we had a discussion about this off mic a little bit, but when I look at it through the lens of rising wages, and yes, it crimps the margins on businesses, but they always have a solution to that, and that's to raise prices. And so I would see that as still as slightly inflationary. We look at the fuel prices with oil up near $80, natural gas has almost doubled. And if we have a cold winter, that's only going to get worse. And you're seeing some of this inflation stick around, but there's a lot of articles I read every day talking about the growth slowing and they expect GDP to start slowing. So to me, it seems like a stagflationary environment is setting up, but you disagree with that. So walk us through how you see it in this kind of environment that we're in.
Sure. First thing I'd say is let's think about energy. Energy is a special thing because it goes into almost everything we have. You think about how farmers, modern farmers, Western farmers are growing crops. They use a lot of petrochemicals and different products, energy, carbon products for both pesticide and fertilizer. So when we think about food, it's very energy intensive, not only for the tractors and the gasoline and all that other stuff that we're familiar with, but also for the fertilizer and the pesticides. So the idea is that energy, price of carbon is in everything we have. And rather than being inflationary, what I want to suggest to you is that higher oil prices are really the opposite. They are a tax on consumption because exactly what you're saying, Chad, businesses will try to pass those costs on. And what do higher prices mean? It's going to mean less demand. And that's really my point, is that the last three business downturns in the U.S. took place after oil prices have doubled. What a lot of people with gray hair will remember is that in 2008, oil prices were around $160 a barrel. Europeans, not the Americans, the Europeans thought this was inflationary, along the lines you were suggesting. And the ECB hiked rates not once, but twice in 2008. Of course, we all know what happened in 2009, 2010, the deepest economic downturn up to that point since the Great Depression. Higher oil prices are a negative shock on an economy. It's a tax that's going to slow the economy down, even if in the short run, it filters into measured inflation, which is also why a lot of central banks, they target headline inflation. They do pay special attention to the core rate. And the reason that the core rate is important is not because energy and food are volatile. The core rate is important because over time, we have found that the headline rate converges to the core rate, not the core rate going to the headline rate. You want to have a guess on where inflation is going to be a year from now, look at the core rate rather than the current headline rate. And the idea of stagnation, I mean, I guess, I mean, of course the economy is going to slow down. I mean, in the second quarter of this year, the U.S. economy grew 6.7%. Of course it's going to slow down. We're losing fiscal support. Some of the pent-up demand has been exhausted. But what are we talking about? We're still talking about above 4% growth through first quarter of next year. After that, still talking about above 2.5% growth the remainder of 2022. So I don't think that 2.5 to 3% growth, it's slow. It's slow, but it's not stagnation. It's basically back to where we were pre-pandemic. So I want to take the, I know that it's important that we have these frameworks to understand these developments. But I just think the stagflation scenario and is misleading, partly because the stagnation part's not being delivered, at least not in the next year. And the inflation is still, I'm just not convinced that the magnitude of CPI, how much it can rise, says anything about the duration. When you look, for me, when I look at some of the numbers, what I'm trying to do then is trying to parse the data and try to see the pace of change. Sort of like, you know, that ball that we throw against the wall, when it hits that wall, that at some point the ball is actually not moving. And I'm looking for those kind of inflection points in the movement in the market and in movement of inflation. And it turns out that when you annualize different periods, you can see how the pace of inflation is already slowing. It's hard to see it when you just look at the headline numbers and the year-over-year pace. But when you look at when you try to begin annualizing and seeing where we're going, I think it's clear that it's slowing. And, you know, next week we get the U.S. CPI. And for the last 3 months or so, it's been 5.3 to 5.4%. That is to say, it's high, elevated. And I think, Chad, to your point, that it's higher than the Federal Reserve had initially anticipated. I do think, too, even though they haven't come out, I think it clearly said that it's lasting longer than they thought. I think that seems to be clear in their signals that they had thought it could have been peaking later this year, and now they've pushed it out into next year. But even there, I think that we'll get the CPI next week, and I think they were still looking at broad stability at these elevated levels.
So then, Mark, in summary then, for investors looking at these markets, which have maybe put in a top, they're at least moving sideways now, and also taking into account this rising dollar, especially this week, the dollar really started to move to the upside. What matters for investors? What are you being aggressive right now? Is it now time for caution? What do you think matters for all those wondering what they should do with their money?
Yeah, I think that once again, we've seen this, we had this nice, I don't know, calling it nice, but we had a pullback in some of the equity indices. And I think that, you know, we gapped higher yesterday in the S&P 500. We're holding above that gap before the weekend. I want to watch what happens there. I think we're sort of indecisive. I think we're at the crossroads now, whether this correction continues to the downside under the weight of higher interest rates and the weight of, you know, the U.S. just kicked the can down the road till early December for the fiscal cap. We're dealing with a lot of, I think, as Chad was mentioning, with the higher oil. So I think that there's a lot of concerns here, and I think that general area in the S&P 500, call it 4,400, is a real key area. If we go down and fill the gap, a different story. But I that's why I think that we'll be watching next week. We do have a lot of economic data besides the CPI. We're also going to get the retail sales report. And so I think that the next week, I think, will be decisive.
All right, Mark, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thanks for taking kind of a bigger picture look at what all this data means for inflation or stagflation. That's a big debate that's going on right now. Mark, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And everyone stick around. We're going to be right back to wrap up the weekend edition.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.